study 30, Return from Babylon, which is looking at Ezra, Haggai, Zechariah, and Nehemiah. And we're going to pick up where we left off last week, which is Nehemiah chapter 4. And at Nehemiah chapter 4, would someone mind getting us started when they get there by reading for us verses 16 through 23?
From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand held on a weapon, and the other and on each of the builders wore a sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us. So we continued the work with half the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time I also said to the people, have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night so they can serve us as guards by night and workmen by day. Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul. So if you can recall, last week we talked about the fact that they're about halfway done. The wall's about halfway tight. And these people groups in the surrounding area, Samaritans, Ammonites, Philistines, the descendants of these groups, get word and they're threatened by it. And they decide to, you know, let's send the word out that we're going to kill these Jewish people. We're just going to take them out. And the word did get out, and great fear set in Jerusalem that, you know, we're rebuilding this wall, but now we're under the threat of very physical danger. And so you have here in verse 16, from that day on, half of my servants carried the work on the work, while half of them held spears, shields, bows, breastplates. So the idea here is, remember, because of this threat, this very serious threat, all the energy and the manpower that's devoted towards rebuilding the wall now had to be basically divided between rebuilding the wall and defending the lives of the people in Jerusalem. Verse 17, those who were rebuilding the wall and those who carried burdens took their load with one hand doing the work. And what was going on with the other hand?
Had a weapon.
They're basically working, you know, had a weapon in one hand for self-defense and, you know, a trowel or, you know, some kind of tool to get the wall built. So it was like double the work, you know, to stay alive and also to get the wall built. Verse 18 is, for the builders each wore his sword girded at his side as he built, while the trumpeter stood near me. The reason for the trumpeter standing near Nehemiah is that Nehemiah was likely at a vantage point where he could see the totality of the circumference of the wall being built. And unlike the people on the ground that, you know, might not have a good vantage point, Nehemiah could have someone blow the shofar to direct a defense again around any point in the wall where attackers may be coming forward. Verse 19, I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is great and extensive, and we're separated on the wall. I mean, they're all over the wall, so it's not like they're, you know, they have to surround it. They have to defend a circle. Verse 20, whatever place you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. And the last point is crucial in verse 20, and it's what we talked about last week. Why should these folks have courage at the end of verse 20? Why should, you know, despite all these odds of these people coming up to destroy them and wanting to kill them, why shouldn't they be afraid?
It's the Lord's battle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's the best way that I've found to get through any kind of intimidation. Just, am I being obedient? If I can check that box, then it's not my battle. And so, you could have a lot of courage when you really just know this is his battle, and he's going to do what he needs to do to get done what he needs to get done. Verse 21, so he carried on the work, with having holy spears from dawn until the stars appear, verse 22. That time I also said, let each man with a servant spend the night within Jerusalem, so that they may be a guard for us by night and a laborer by day. And the idea here in verse 22 is that it wasn't just people within the city working. He had people, Jewish families around in Judea that were coming in each day, basically traveling in the city to work, leaving at night. And they got to the point where Nehemiah was like, look, it's too dangerous to go back and forth in and out of the city. Stay in the city, and that way we can get work done quicker, and people could be in the city in the night for self-defense. Someone read verses... Oh, now that's chapter 4. We're done with chapter 4. We're in chapter 5 now. Could someone read verses 1 through 5?
And there was a great outcry from the people and their wives against their Jewish brethren. For there were those who said, we, our sons, and our daughters are many. Therefore, let us gain what we may eat and live. There were also some who said, we have mortgaged our lands and our vineyards and houses that we might buy grain because of the famine. There were also those who said that we have borrowed money from the king's tax on our lands and vineyards. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children. And indeed they were forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves, and some of our daughters have been brought into slavery. It is not in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards.
Okay, great. So, not a lot of information here in these five verses, what we've read so far, but can anyone kind of give their thoughts as to what this all means, these five verses? What's going on here?
Well, you're concentrating a large group of people in a small area that doesn't have an agriculture, doesn't have Walmart that they can run down to. So they're running out of resources, and they're being taken advantage of.
That's exactly right. How are they being taken advantage of?
They're having to sell whatever they can, even their family members.
That's right.
To gain the resources.
Good, good. Now, here's the big question. Who's taking advantage of them?
Their own people.
The Jews. Yeah. Sometimes the biggest threats that we face are within our own communities. There's always going to be someone that's in it for themselves.
And it's all because of food. It looks like there's a famine in the area and everything, and that they don't have anything to eat, so they're having to go ahead and sell off their land and their kids.
Yeah, you got here in verse 1, now there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. Verse 2, for there were those who said, we, our sons and our daughters are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live. And the idea with verse 1 and 2 is that, like Rod said, we need food to eat. Why are we spending this time and energy to rebuild this wall when we need food? And not only do we need food because we've been taken advantage of in verse 1 by our Jewish brothers. People with means within the community saw an opportunity in the tragedy, in the crisis, to take advantage for their own gain. And this is how it was done. Verse 3. Well, there were others who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses that we may get grain because of the famine. And so, again, people in the area, because there was no food, were having to kind of like what we do. If we need money and we have assets with no liquidity, we'll borrow and we'll secure the borrowing with assets like a land or a home. So who is lending them this money?
The Jews.
Yeah. They're people with means that could look to take advantage of the situation. verse 4, there were also those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. So now the folks are telling Nehemiah, not only are we indebted to our fellow community members, but also the king of Persia wants his shimmy shank too. And because of the famine, we don't have liquidity, so we're having to borrow money to pay what we owe him. Verse 5. Now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, and our children like their children. So now the people that are really getting Nehemiah's attention are saying, you know, we're no different than they are, their Jewish colleagues. And our kids are just like their kids. But, middle of verse 5, behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we are helpless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. The only way to get out of this extreme poverty and this extreme debt, back in the day, you could not file chapter 7. You could not walk into the courthouse, Roger, and say, you know what? I know I borrowed a lot of money, but I don't feel like repaying. And just walk out. Yeah. No. You had to sell a child. And these Jewish people were selling their children to get out of debt. And it's likely they were selling their children, probably not to other Jews, but into the nations, to the Gentiles. So the whole reason Nehemiah is there and the people are doing all of this work is because God's told Nehemiah to do it and to regather Israel into the land. And in absolute contradiction to the whole goal, you've got Jews selling their children into slavery to the nations from which they're supposed to be redeemed from by the Lord, because people within the community are taking advantage of them. So I'm going to read verses 6 through 13 and then we'll finish.
When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are exacting usury from your own countrymen. So I called together a large meeting to deal with them and said, as far as possible, we ought to back our Jewish brothers who we have bought back our Jewish brothers who were sold to the Gentiles. Now you are selling your brothers only for them to be sold back to us. They kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. So I continued, what you are doing is not right. Shouldn't you walk in the fear of our God to avoid the reproach of our Gentile armies, enemies? I and my brothers and my men are also lending the people money and grain, but let the exacting of usury stop. Give back to them immediately their fields, vineyards, olive groves, and houses, and also the usury you are charging them, the 100th part of the money, grain, new wine, and oil. We will give it back, they said, and we will not demand anything more from them. We will do as you say. Then I summoned the priest and made the nobles and officials take an oath to do what they had promised. I shook out the folds of my robe and said, in this way may God shake out of his house and possessions every man who does not keep this promise. So may such a man be shaken out and emptied. At this the whole assembly said amen and praised the Lord. And the people did as they promised.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. So let me just do a quick recap and we'll end and we'll pick up next week. By the way, I'm not going to be here next week, Tim, but the following Friday. So this has been the theme of Ezra and Nehemiah, and it's actually good. Nehemiah recognizes what's going on, and what does Nehemiah do?
Calls them together.
Good, he calls them out. So don't be in denial. It's an obligation to confront people in our own community when they're doing something wrong. You have an obligation to confront your brother or brothers or the church or the churches if they're doing something way off base. And the good news, which is very unusual in biblical history, is how do the people respond?
Together, they came together and they agreed.
And they recognize, yeah, they say, you're right, we're screwed up, and we repent. And that's highly unusual for people to do, especially Israel. But you see in Ezra and Nehemiah, that's a theme. They do recognize when they screwed up and they decide, let's fix this. So what we'll do next, when we get back together to talk about this, we'll see exactly what was going on, what they admitted doing wrong, and how they decided to get it fixed. And with that, we'll close.